If department stores had done a better job of keeping up with some of their own promises to the customer, like really nice displays, interesting merchandising, and customer service, would they be in the kind of trouble that they're in now? I'm Daphne Howland, senior reporter with Retail Dive, and this is our podcast. We cover the important news, trends, and happenings in retail, and we often go into the story behind those stories too. Welcome to the backroom. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Backroom. Today I have with me one of my editors, Kara Salpini, who is senior editor at Retail Dive and responsible for improving my copy pretty much every day. Kara, thanks for joining The Backroom today.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about a retailer that's usually in your space, Daphne, with Macy's.
Yeah, so Kara just published a blockbuster photo essay, essentially, or a very photo-oriented story about a Macy's store that's closing near where you're based, right, Kara?
Yeah, it's basically right across the street from me. I can see it from my balcony. So it was one of those situations where I think it was our coworker Karin who was like, "Hey, you should go take a look at that store," because it just happened to be one of those closures announced at the beginning of this year. And it turned out to be a great call. It was a really interesting kind of process to get a look into that we don't usually take that close of a look at. We talk about store closures so much, but we don't really visit a store closing that often.
And really, a Macy's store closing, even though in a way this is a headline we've seen a bunch of, in the past few years, Macy's announced a turnaround strategy right before the pandemic. And that entailed closing a bunch of stores. 3 years later, they said they had pretty much finished up. So even though a lot of neighborhoods and malls have seen their Macy's store close, this latest round of 150 more stores to be closed over the next 3 years means that the Macy's store that's probably a very familiar retailer to a lot of people in that demographic area are going to lose kind of a stalwart retailer. Do you know how long that Macy's store has been there?
Great question. I don't know how long it's been there. It's been a kind of key fixture of that mall the whole time that I've lived in this area. And I will say, the interesting thing about that closure in specific, I'm in Arlington, Virginia, and the Ballston Quarter Mall has kind of been undergoing this revamp over the years where it feels like they've just added all of these dining options in particular that are really popular companies. You have Ted's Bulletin, you have Shake Shack, there's Bar Taco, there's this great food court. And so there's been a lot of investment in the area around the mall, which is one of the things that kind of stuck out to me about that Macy's closing in particular. It's kind of, I guess, surprising, given that there seems to be interest in kind of developing out that mall.
It's usually not great news when a mall loses an anchor. And even with the pressures that Macy's been under and the pressures that department stores in general have been under, Macy's is probably one of the ones that you don't want to lose.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. It's a challenge to know, I think, what to do with that space because these are huge retail spaces. So what was it like walking around this store?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, to your last point, I think that was the thing that struck me the most about walking through the location was this was three floors of merchandise. It's not a small location. Walking through this store, there was an entire floor dedicated to mattresses, furniture, big ticket kind of items like that. You had a floor of apparel focused items. You had, bedding and home appliances and stuff on the top floor. So it just, it takes up so much space. And, you know, that's not necessarily surprising because it's a department store, but I think going through a location that is closing just really puts into perspective like how much is actually going on in a department store at a given time. Like, yeah. Something about seeing all of the boxes out on the floor and seeing all of, like, you know, they weren't just discounting merchandise. They were getting rid of, like, fixtures. They were, mm-hmm. You know, they had some stuff set aside to, like, transfer to other stores. Like, you don't think about kind of all of the components that go into a store outside of your basic inventory until they're kind of, like, stacking mannequins in a corner.
Yeah.
Because they need to get rid of those, too. So, yeah, I think it kind of struck me that, like, you know, how enormous of an undertaking it is to not only run these locations, but then when it comes time to shutter them, there's really a lot that you have to sort through. Not to mention that, you know, employees are impacted by it. Customers are impacted by no longer having that location. And for department stores as well, like, they cover such a broad number of categories, that can be really impactful in a certain area.
So for some retailers, it's actually good news because Macy's is still a really popular destination. People think of Macy's and their local department store in general for things like prom and graduation and stuff like that. The holidays, department stores always show up in surveys of where people are going to go to shop. So when that location closes, other places that sell all the things that are in a Macy's could probably pick up market share. And we actually just did a story about how Off-Price, which has already been kind of stealing share from Macy's and other department stores, is all set to do really well in the areas where the Macy's stores are closing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other thing, I mean, I have a couple thoughts on that. One part of it is, I think it's interesting that Off-Price is kind of well positioned according to, you know, several different analysts, because Macy's itself has kind of identified Off-Price as, like, part of their business that they want to invest more in. But on to one of your other points about, like, you know, who else potentially benefits from some of these closures. I live on top of a Target, which is interesting to think about how this Macy's is closing right across the street from this relatively new Target. And I know you and I have talked about this before of, I think it was a couple years ago, you did a story about Target kind of taking some of the modern department store thunder, where they've got all of these different categories, just like department stores do. They invest in their private labels and kind of have this more chic, I guess, offering. So I'm wondering about if someone like Target factors into this as well, and maybe that's part of why the store in particular was kind of selected, or who else is around these certain department stores. Like, is the mix of tenants impacting which stores they're closing?
It could very well be. Target's store redesigns in the past few years, I'm sure people remember a few years ago when Target announced that we're going to spend billions in revamping stores, and it's noticeable. I mean, I would love to kind of go back in time and visit a Target store from 10 years ago versus what they look like now.
Yeah.
They're not exactly sectioned off like Macy's, but they definitely have the sort of vernacular. There are more, you know, modular spaces, and
they've invested in all of those shop and shop concepts too, right? Like Ulta and the Apple shop and shops and Disney tie-ups around toys. I mean, like, they're investing in all of the same kind of experiences that a department store would offer.
And they know how to do pop-ups too. If they have, you know, one of their limited edition collaborations or something, they have a space for kind of a rotating, attention-getting area. And then, as you said, their private labels are, I mean, they have several blockbusters in apparel, consumer goods, and to the point where Macy's itself kind of poached a couple of key executives from the Target private label design team. So there's definitely some overlap there and probably opportunity for Target.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I kind of was curious about that I actually thought you might have some thoughts on, but, you know, one of the things that Tony Spring said recently when talking about these, you know, 150 closures and kind of why they were necessary is that there were a ton of Macy's stores that he said were, quote, built for a different era, which just really stuck with me as an interesting kind of way to think about their store footprint. And he was like, look, it doesn't even matter to an extent if the store is profitable or not. Like, we've got to be more ruthless with kind of cutting down this footprint. I'm curious for what your thoughts are on like what era, I guess, does he think that they were built for? Like, what could that be a reference to?
I think that department stores have probably had several eras, but there are two major department store eras in my mind. One is the original era, in basically the 19th century or early 20th century, when they were downtown or in the middle of town, usually kind of nice buildings, and the architecture and everything was designed and thoughtful, and the store was its own store on a block downtown, and it was a special thing to go to your local
right, department it was like store. An experience.
Yeah, I mean, shopping was not just a transactional thing. I need a prom dress. It was, we're going to go to Macy's today. And a lot of them had, you know, restaurants inside the stores, and it was an event. People talk about going to Marshall Field's in Chicago, you know, taking several trains to get there on a Saturday. And then, of course, something that Macy's still very much owns in New York is the holiday, the Thanksgiving Day parade, the 4th of July fireworks. I mean, some of that is still, at least in some of these flagship cities, still relevant. So that's the first era. The second era would be the mall era, when downtown was increasingly neglected as a shopping destination, and people were moving to the suburbs and relying on cars, and malls just proliferated across America, and department stores anchored those malls. And I think that was another resurgence. That was probably also the seeds of their demise, though, because...
Yeah, I was going to say, there was such a huge expansion on Macy's part during kind of that era where, you know, they were acquiring left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote a really, really detailed piece on that expansion, but, like, how does that kind of factor into what we're talking about now with this kind of surprise announcement of 150 more closures?
I think that, like, two different things were going on. One is probably too many malls were built, which meant too many department stores were put into too many malls. So you have too many stores already just sort of happening. Then you have, as you mentioned, Macy's acquiring in a couple of different waves all these local department stores. I mean, if you look at that story that you're talking about, you just look at the department store names that probably like your parents or grandparents would recognize that were founded by, you know, the local family and were known to that city or town forever as that name. And then, you know, eventually they all became Macy's. Macy's, right. Macy's, Macy's. It's why we have so many Macy's, is because Macy's bought fleets of department stores and changed the name to Macy's. Speaking of Chicago, Chicago is still not over that, because Marshall Field's was really beloved in Chicago, the man, and that downtown flagship, you know, State Street department store is just iconic to Chicagoans. So the fact that it's a Macy's rankles a lot of people still. So when Tony Spring says they were built for a different era, is he talking about the 19th century or is he talking about the mid 20th century?
I mean, in my mind, it feels like the latter. It feels like it's a response to, you know, we kind of overbuilt Macy's at one point when people were perhaps going to the mall more, or people were, yeah, there was a lot more investment in the mall, and now we're kind of having to scale back because it's just not an effective way to run this size of a business anymore. And it's interesting to me too, of like the fact that at the same time that they are closing these stores, they're not talking about like, you know, not investing anymore. They're just investing in things that are not the traditional Macy's. They're investing in small formats. They're investing in, you know, the off-price business. And I also think it's interesting that they're investing in Bloomingdale's because, you know, on one hand, you've got, it seems like they're kind of splitting between like off-price on one hand, which is more value than Macy's, and then Bloomingdale's on the other hand, which is more luxury or high-end than Macy's. And Macy's is the one that's getting kind of shrunk. Like the middle income, I guess, retailer is the one that's disappearing more so.
So that tracks with the trend in the United States when it comes to the middle class too. The middle class has been shrinking. The people who are, you know, wealthier households always, you know, can weather downturns more easily. But even now, you're seeing research that shows even wealthier households are sort of trading down. They might go to off price, or they might, you know, buy the private label, or, you know, even they will be more careful. But if you're on the lower end of the spectrum, you're boxed in. It's harder to trade down because there's discount, there's mid, and then there's higher end. I think more and more people are sort of getting funneled into the discount just out of necessity.
Right. And if we talk about like some of the retailers, some of the other department stores specifically that have been struggling in recent years, like JCPenney comes to mind as well. And that's a very similar demographic. And Nordstrom, on the other hand, is one of the ones that's usually doing pretty well comparatively. And they've always skewed a little higher end.
Right. So part of it is kind of going back to what Tony Spring was saying, is the department store model itself, you know, a throwback to a different era? Are they just too big?
Right.
Do we have too many apparel sales? And is that part of the problem? There are people who will tell you the mall itself sort of undermined department stores because whereas, you know, they used to sit downtown and be the destination for all the things, makeup and apparel, dresses, the latest styles, ties, you go into a mall and all the departments of the department store are specialty retailers in the mall. So you have Sephora,
yes,
you know, is competing with the Macy's beauty counter. You have all those specialty apparel retailers that are competing with all that, you know, Macy's apparel. Doesn't help that there are things like fast fashion retailers that are competing on price too. So
no, I think that's a great point on kind of one of the flaws of the mall strategy. Also, like, it brings up again, you know, one of the things that's appealing about a store that sells everything or tries to be an everything store, like department stores in many ways are, is that now you've got Target, Walmart, that are both also everything stores. And like, they might have, you know, they might have lower kind of quality or like not necessarily be in the same level as a Macy's and in some of the name brands that they carry or don't carry. But like we talked about earlier with Target has been investing heavily in that with name brands, also with its private labels. And Walmart has also been pretty heavily investing in bringing in some more exclusive or interesting kind of startup brands and that kind of thing. And so it kind of feels like the reason to go to a Macy's or to go to a department store is if you've got multiple categories, you're trying to shop at one time. But if I've got multiple categories, I'm trying to shop at one time, I'm more likely to go to a Target than I am to go to a mall to walk around just a Macy's. If I'm going to the mall, I'm probably going to be visiting other places.
There's another thing though, and part of it is the expectations you have of Target. You know, if you're going to buy wine glasses at Target, you're kind of expecting it to be in that houseware section. Maybe they're probably boxed up and they're sort of stacked. I don't mean to say that they're, you know, bad looking, but it's not like, I remember going to the Macy's in Brooklyn with a friend who had to replace his, you know, crystal wine glasses that a friend of his broke. Was that friend me? Yes, I accidentally was sitting on the floor with a glass of wine. I kicked it when I got up. And, you know, it was really nice. The display of all the various glassware was really nice, and the service was really good. This was a long time ago. So I do think there is an open question, and from what I hear from some analysts, this applies to Nordstrom too, which is famous for its customer service. If department stores had done a better job of keeping up with some of their own promises to the customer, like really nice displays, interesting merchandising, and customer service, would they be in the kind of trouble that they're in now?
Right. Yeah. Well, and you also have, you know, Tony Springs talking about how Bloomingdale's is a roadmap for Macy's. And that sticks out to me as a lot of the things you're mentioning here, too, of like more kind of vibrant displays, a higher level of customer service, you know, all of those things that are not necessarily hallmarks of Macy's anymore. And I think about, too, like there was a Bloomie's, their small format store that opened in this area a few years ago, about like 15 or 20 minutes from me. And that location, that's also a small format, but that feels so different from the Macy's department store that just closed across the street. And granted, you can't, you know, you can't judge a department store that is literally in the process of shuttering too harshly. But the difference between just how modern the Bloomie's felt and how kind of not, you know, not necessarily experiential, but just focused on, I guess, the aesthetics of the experience and making it a pleasant kind of environment. That effort I really noticed in that store versus, you know, this Macy's that just closed across from me is just kind of your typical Macy's. Like, it's at the end of the day, it's like a large space with a lot of stuff in it.
You know, just what you're talking about, the luggage section in my local Macy's, which I don't think is going to be one of the ones closing, but we actually don't know yet which all of the 150 that were just announced will be closing. It's just luggage stacked on kind of platforms, you know, and up on right against the wall and stuff like that. And I always think, why not make this into a whole travel section where, you know, like a, if you were going to design a luggage pop-up, you'd probably have, you know, other things that you need when you travel. It would be merchandise a certain way. I mean, I'm not even a merchandiser, and I'm thinking, you should do that, you know?
Yeah, we do this better. Yeah.
So it seems like, especially considering they have so much space, they have space to do some interesting things that might draw people in. Because in some categories, Macy's still does sell, you know, good brands that people want to buy.
Right. And to your point earlier, like, Macy's is such a well-known name. So it's not, you know, it's not something that people are just going to, like, kind of brush aside because it's closed this additional tranche of stores. Like, people are going to still go to Macy's. They're going to, especially at some of those flagship locations you mentioned that are really iconic, like Herald Square. I mean, there's a lot of brand awareness around Macy's and positive associations, I think, with Macy's. So I don't think this is anywhere near a situation where, like, Macy's risks just no longer being relevant, but it feels like there is such an opportunity to invest more in that store experience, to elevate it more. But I wonder again, like, you know, can they do that without making Macy's into Bloomingdale's or without kind of, I guess, cannibalizing what else they have in their portfolio? Like, I'm trying to think of what the move is for them, because you have Target and Walmart competing with your current setup. You have off-pricers competing with you on value, and then you already own a luxury department store.
So this is a question for Tony Spring, who, of course, was the CEO of Bloomingdale's for a long time before he started as CEO of Macy's. So he needs to tell us what exactly about Bloomingdale's would he apply to the Macy's banner, because I'm not sure that Macy's or Macy's Inc. as a conglomerate has room for a higher end Macy's. I'm not sure that the Macy's customer is gonna go for that.
Right.
Bloomingdale's is a little bit more like Nordstrom in the sense that it's about the same size fleet, just not as many stores. You're not gonna find a Bloomingdale's in nearly as many places as you'd find a Macy's. I don't know. I think they're, as long as the, you know, wages are up, employment's good, if the middle class can get its footing back, maybe there would be a place for Macy's, but probably the overbuilding of the malls that is being corrected now and is kind of coinciding with the downsizing of Macy's, probably that has to shake out anyway. But if they get themselves to a sort of ideal footprint, it feels like they still have these other questions to answer.
Right. And I think, I mean, one last thing that I kind of want to at least chat about is, you know, with these small formats that they're investing in and growing more, like, what do you think the goal is with some of those? And is that kind of like antithetical to the idea of a department store? Like, if you're going small format, you're it's necessary that you downsize the inventory offering. So I guess, like, how do you go about doing that in a way that draws customers in, and that doesn't, yeah, feel kind of, I guess, like you're straying from your brand purpose?
I'm really curious about how this, some of the small format plan is going to work.
Well, and because we all saw the whole story situation, which is what I keep thinking of, you know, everyone in retail was really high on that partnership and thought that was such a great, you know, concept and potentially a really impactful acquisition for Macy's. And it doesn't feel like a lot has come out of that for at least the core fleet.
One of the things is, besides the fact that Macy's has a lot of stores, even if it is many fewer after 3 years, is that it's a really big traditional company. Macy's has innovated in a lot of ways. They've been often ahead of the curve when it comes to technology. They've invested in things, and like you said, that included Story, which, just to remind people, was sort of this, it was a store in New York City that kind of modeled itself after magazines. So it would have like a special issue and it would partner with different brands and have a theme. It was fun. It was a fun thing, and it was always rotating, so it was always new. A lot of things about that felt right for the moment. This was all pre-pandemic, and Macy's invested in them at first and then outright bought the company and hired the founder of Story. And we saw a few, I think there's some stories at Retail Dive, more than one, about that experiment. And it didn't really ever capture the magic that was that store in Chelsea in Manhattan. It never really kind of was a full-throated rendition of it.
Well, and it also does feel harder, in a sense, to capture that same feeling, again, when you're operating with these spaces that are so big. you know, maybe with some of the small formats, there is kind of a more of a chance to think about some really thoughtful themed merchandising experiences, which would be great, which would be interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how things, I guess, shake out with the small formats they're moving forward with, and what they do with the main fleet. Because even with closing these additional stores, I think Tony Spring was saying they want, what, like 350 stores as their core fleet? That is still, like, that's hundreds of locations that, you know, need to be maintained, need to keep consumers interested. So I'm just curious to see kind of how they end up doing that.
I know a few analysts who probably would say that 350 is probably still too high a number.
Yeah.
They probably need to be in the best malls. They've got flagships that you would think would never close. Although we're hearing that San Francisco is likely to close. And that one really surprised me. I know that San Francisco has had its issues and there's a lot of stories in the news and a lot of retailers have left that Union Square shopping area, but that Macy's store was iconic. So maybe it won't just be mall stores.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point too of, you know, what stores close that we're not necessarily expecting. Because to your point, I mean, San Francisco has had a lot of challenges, but I remember too, like we were talking about this, however long ago it was that Gap closed that flagship in San Francisco. And that was like also a big kind of surprise. So I don't know. I think San Francisco might be unique in that it seems like retailers are just fleeing currently from the city. But yeah, I'm curious to see where else ends up on their closures list outside of, yeah, kind of your expected underperforming mall stores.
Gap is another retailer that opened way too many stores. And so in a way, it's like, once you've overdone it, you know, comes the hangover. And right. How do you deal with that? How do you, you know, kind of wrestle down an overblown fleet of stores? And I guess so far there are some surprises in how that gets dealt with. I have a feeling this regime under Tony Spring, it's already started off so interesting. I mean, we didn't even talk about the fact that they narrowly avoided a proxy fight because there are these activist investors who want Macy's to monetize its real estate. And honestly, the store closures is part of that. It must be a response to that pressure. So on the one hand, it's this immediate response to this immediate pressure that is coming from a couple of firms who have literally bid $6.6 billion to take Macy's over. And if that were to happen, which that is still on the table, if that were to happen, that's a whole nother potential set of activity when it comes to Macy's and its stores. So obviously we'll be keeping an eye on that. Kara, thanks for stopping by. Kara is, as I said, my editor, but she writes a ton of stories too. So we'll be covering this and other stories at Retail Dive.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And maybe we'll be having another conversation in a year if there are more closures coming down the pike.
This episode of The Backroom was produced and edited by Caroline Jansen. Please be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.